It is a given of this moment in history that many Americans spend time with their faces aimed at small screens in their hands, smartphones and other mobile devices. Just this morning, I watched a friend not cross a street when he had the walk light because he was looking at a screen. We'll focus this hour on younger people and their use of social media. It's a very big deal in the lives of young people, and our guest this hour has many ideas for keeping it all in perspective. Anna Homayoun is the author of Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. Anna is the founder of Green Ivy Educational Consulting. She works as a counselor and consultant, helping students manage distractions and boost their personal productivity in a variety of learning environments. Social Media Wellness is her third book. Anna Homayoun, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So does social media represent a much greater distraction than students faced in the past from what the distractions were back then?
Well, they face the ultimate paradox today, right? So it's very different. When I first started working with students in 2001, and they would come into my office, they would say their biggest distractions were their pets, their siblings, food, and daydreaming. And then about a decade ago, I realized that more and more students were affected by what I call the digital creep. They go online for 5 minutes, and then 45 minutes later, they're watching, today, cat videos. And what I've found, though, over the last 5 or 6 years, which is why I wrote the book, is this ultimate paradox that students now need to use the same tools to get their work done that are also their biggest distraction from getting their work done. And part of it is because so many schools have brought computers and tablets into the classroom where students have free access. So the issue isn't that distractions haven't existed. It's just that, and, you know, kids could daydream in the class 10 years ago. It's just that there's a confluence of distractions that kind of create this watershed of content that kids don't know how to turn off in reality, and that's how we have to help.
I had a real oh yeah moment when you pointed up the devices in the book because, you know, if your inclination is to say, put that down and focus on your schoolwork, it's like, Ma, this is where I do my schoolwork.
Exactly. And a lot of kids use that as the excuse with their parents, right? I'm in my room up late at night because I'm doing my homework, where when they come into my office, they're real with me. And they're like, they are actually, you know, toggling between multiple screens. They're answering messages online. And what we try and do in the office is show that the same work that would take them 5 hours with distractions can take them 2 hours without distractions. And why we get so many students to really want to follow our methods is because we make it all about them. Our goal is to get them an extra 7 to 10 hours of free time per night so they can go to bed earlier, be more well-rested, and actually do better in school. And we're not about telling them to stay off social media because we know that that's their way of socialization. So we're not saying this is bad. We're just saying let's make this healthier and smarter all around.
Anna, you say at the outset of the book we are having the wrong conversations with our kids about social media. What are we saying and why is that wrong?
Well, even just over the last couple months, if you go on social media or you go on the news, they're all saying smartphones are ruining a generation or kids are online and it's ruining the way they socialize. And what that's doing is just creating a system where kids go underground even further, right? And what I talk about in the book is creating a different framework where we change the conversation, that we acknowledge that social media isn't good or bad. It's a new way of communication. And that as parents and educators, we need to understand the language and help give kids the right tools so that we can help them make better choices for healthier lives online and in real life. That's the thing. You know, a couple months ago, I don't know if you remember that situation where Harvard rescinded offers from 10 students who were sharing inappropriate messages in a private chat room. But that sort of spurred this online national conversation around what kids are doing and hiding online. And I say a lot of that is because we had the wrong conversations with them. We said, don't do this because you'll get in trouble, you won't get in college, you won't get a job. And so that didn't prevent them from doing anything. That simply made them go online and or underground online. And what I'm saying is let's have the conversations where we build intrinsic motivation within kids. This is what I've been doing in my office for the last decade, where they start making better choices online and in real life.
Well, and the pace of change, which the kids keep up with because they're digital natives, they know all this stuff, and when their friends use it, they're going to use it too. But it can really surprise adults. I mean, the constantly new sites and new apps. I mean, you mentioned ask.fm as one of the things that people go to, or one of the people you were dealing with. And I had to look it up. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, and you know what? Actually, that's what's so funny. When I was writing this book, you know, books go through editing, copy editing, multiple drafts, you know that. So by the time I got to the final copy edit version, I still had to change something in the book because one of the companies went under, you know, that had been around for 4 years and was very popular in April of this year went under. So I did sort of change the wording in it. But you mentioned something really important is that everything is always changing. So Ask.fm, which is the initial story in the book, still does exist, but now there's Yellow, which is sort of called the Tinder for tweens and teens, where it's swipe right, swipe left to figure out if you want to be friends with somebody. But not only that, there's a geolocation. So it shows exactly where that you are at that time that you're using the app, which is kind of dangerous. So in the book, we talk about the three S's, or I talk about the three S's, this framework that I created for talking with kids around social media, and it's healthy socialization, effective self-regulation, and overall safety, which is physical safety and social safety. So, you know, we talk about that because with things like Yellow or things like Snap Map, which is a feature on Snapchat, geolocation is a problem. Like,
it is. Hold on for a second. We need to take a break, and we'll come back and talk more about social media wellness with Anna Homayoun here on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Anna Homayoun, who's a consultant and counselor who helps students learn how to get the distractions out of their lives and be better students. So she works with a lot of teens and tweens, and she's written her third book about how to put social media off to the side long enough to make it work for you and not against you. The book is called Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. There's lots to learn in here, not just for the tweens and teens, but also for parents and grandparents. And you can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Anna, you were on the third of the three S's. Can you restate the three S's?
Sure. So healthy socialization, effective self-regulation, and overall safety. And I was just speaking about how sometimes when we think about safety, we just think about the physical, but we really need to think about the social and emotional costs as well. And so focusing on how do we keep kids safe in a world that's always changing. And that's some of the things that I talk about in the book are really how do you have the conversations with kids in a way that helps them start to make changes even when you're not watching.
One thing that I need to ask about is, though, we're talking about tweens and teens, so people between childhood and the young childhood and adolescence in the tweens. There are some regulations, at least are supposed to be within the sites themselves, about when you can sign on to social media, aren't there, by age?
Right. So most sites will follow COPPA, which says that you should be 13 years old, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But actually, sort of if you really understand the language of COPPA, it puts the control in the hands of the parents. And what I find more and more, I travel around the country, my office is based in the Silicon Valley, is that many parents of 9, 10, 11-year-olds will have their kids think it's okay to have their kids have an Instagram account or be on Snapchat. And every family is different. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that parents really need to understand what that means and also understand that every family is different. What works for one family doesn't work for another. But to understand what's going on in your community and being aware of that is really an important part of this process as well.
How many hours a day, the number was shocking to me, how many hours a day are people between the ages of 13 and 18 online?
Well, they're using some form of media. Teens are using some form of media around 9 hours per day. And because so much of that media these days is online, much of that time is spent online. And the other thing is we know that 94% of teenagers go online every day. But what is really concerning to me and why I wrote this book is that 24% feel like they're online all the time, right? They're picking up their phone within 5 minutes of waking up in the morning, and they'll admit to me that they wake up in the middle of the night to answer text messages if notifications pop up, and it just doesn't allow them to have a good night's sleep. That affects their productivity. That affects their mood. I often ask parents when I talk to at schools, you know, how many of you have ever dealt with a irritable teenager? And everybody often laughs. And I say much of that is because of sleep deprivation. And one of the things kids always tell me is that they wish their parents knew that even if you take their phone away, they often have two or three different devices in their room. So it's not just about taking the phone away. It's about changing the conversation so kids have, you know, are starting to make better choices and feel empowered to do so. And also giving tools around effective self-regulation, because even if kids want to limit their time online, there are so many temptations and their brain isn't fully developed. So it can be hard to make those good decisions that they want to do without parental or educator, you know, interference, if you will.
You know, and it's not just the concern about them staying awake at night, but even in their waking hours. I'm struck by the your idea here that constant social media use reduces time for processing. Can you explain that?
Sure. Like, if we think about it, right, when we go to sleep, there's actually an emotional detox that occurs when our brains are sleeping, right, and our bodies are sleeping. And the same thing happens when we're able to go for a walk without any distractions and just walk around, or where we spend time in nature. We know that as adults, right? That's when ideas come to us, when solutions come to us. If we had an argument with somebody, we're able to process it or come up with what we want to say or how we want to deal with it. But when we don't allow people to have that time, or people don't have that time because they're constantly online, I mean, you see that in the madness that is Twitter sometimes, right? People are constantly reacting without time to process. And for teenagers whose prefrontal cortex is not fully developed, that's really can be dangerous. And it also doesn't allow for their full developmental growth, right? They don't have that 2 or 3 hours to process. Or what I like to say is, you know, it's no longer that the school day ends at 3 o'clock and they can go home and think about things till the next day. There's the post-school social experience that happens online.
We are talking to Anna Homayoun about her book, Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. The idea that social media has such a large effect on how people perceive themselves, how they perceive others, how big an effect does it have? I mean, does it sort of pollute what goes on in face-to-face discussions with kids now, or is it all one big world, or what?
Sure. I think there's a lot to think about. So in the book, I talk about healthy socialization. And when I visit schools, one of the things that strikes me is how often kids have not really realized that they have the opportunity to be off if they want to. They think that they will miss out, right? There's that fear of missing out, or FOMO. And so because of that, they don't feel like they can ever turn off or go away from being online all the time. And they get this constant stream of content. So I make a joke a lot of times with junior high and high school students about if they're on Instagram and they scroll all the way to the end and they see all the photos on the feed, do they just reload and keep reloading? And they all laugh because they're like, yes, that's what we do. And what it does is it alters our expectations of what reality should look like for us, because, you know, we're constantly comparing our real lives, or teenagers are, to, and adults do this too, right, to the highlight reel of expectations that occur online, right? People don't normally put everything about their reality online. They curate it. And when we look at it, we should know and instinctively know that that's what's happening, but we don't often do that. And over time, what I help kids understand with this healthy socialization piece is, A, you have options on how you filter in or filter out things. You don't have to follow people. And also, identify what you find is energizing for you online or you find is draining. So back to the example of Ask FM, or there's something even newer called Soraya, where people, it's all about people telling you what they really think about you. So as adults, we kind of are like, well, I don't really want anonymous people to tell me what I think about, what they think about me. But kids, that's a really big part of their developmental process. They want to know what people think about them. They want to be liked. And so one of the things I talk about in the book is helping kids understand that if it's a draining experience for them, they have the opportunity to opt out, and they should opt out if it's not making them feel good. And more we find that when kids are given permission to do so, they do. But we need to help them understand they have permission and they don't have to be on all the time.
All right, so this is self-regulation, but you point out that adults often mess up in approaching the issue of self-regulation by kids. How do we mess up as their parents?
Well, a lot of times we'll make it like a shameful thing that you can't why can't you self-regulate? And my argument is really instead of a fear and shame perspective, we should come from it from a compassionate and empathetic perspective, because look at how hard it is for parents to self-regulate or adults to self-regulate. We all know people who can't stay off their phones, right? We all know people that, or when we go into a restaurant, we see four people around sitting around and all being on their phones. It's hard to stay off your phones whether or not you want to or not. And so when we talk about kids who are still developing, who want to be liked, who have this fear of missing out, we have to come from a place of compassion and understanding about how hard it is to be a teen in a world that is not only in real life but always also online, and give them tools to effectively self-regulate, stay safe, and feel as though they are energized socially rather than drained.
What are some first steps there then? What kinds of things does a parent provide for a child to allow them to self-regulate?
Well, there are a couple things. I think the first thing you do is really have an awareness of what's going on. You know, where and how are your kids using their social media? So, you know, the app moment can be really helpful for seeing how often do kids go on their phone. A lot of times kids will say they don't have time for things. Like I had one of the stories in the book is a girl who said, I don't have time to play the clarinet anymore. And I said, well, why don't you put moment on your phone and check for a week and see how much time you're actually spending on your phone. And she was able to find a half an hour to 45 minutes a day to play the clarinet, which is something she liked to do. So awareness is the first key. Then really understanding what are the options for self-regulation, you know, and sometimes it can be using technology tools. So one of the favorites for a lot of my students is something called the Forest app. And what Forest does is it is an app that you go on and you say, okay, I want to stay off my phone for 25 minutes or 40 minutes or 60 minutes. And you set a timer. And then once you do that, a digital tree grows. And if you try and use your phone, it says, stay off the tree. You know, you'll kill the tree if you, you know, use your phone. And kids actually really like it because it gamifies, you know, self-regulation and it makes it fun. And I'll never forget one of my students came in after I had recommended Forest to her to help her do her homework. She came in the next week. She goes, do you know that it plants an actual tree if I get enough points? So it gamified it, and she used it to complete her work. And if you get a certain number of points, the Forest app will actually plant an actual tree. So they love it. And then the third thing to realize is to also build in times for effective self-regulation in your home. And so what I mean by that is, you know, I have moments in my day where I don't use technology. Like when I go to the park and I walk my dogs, I don't use my phone. And find as parents, what are those times for your day and for your family's time that you can set a good example but also create this space for being off. So maybe that's family dinner. Maybe that's 3 hours on a Saturday. Maybe that's, you know, all devices go downstairs at 10 o'clock. Every family is different. And the key about this book and about my work is that I really understand that there's no one-size-fits-all approach. And my focus is helping parents, educators, and teens themselves find solutions for wherever their lives are or whatever works for them, because our ultimate goal is all to be healthier online and in real life.
The book is called Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. The author, Anna Homayoun, is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's a counselor and consultant, as you can hear clearly, helping students find ways to maximize their time and minimize their distractions. Join the conversation on the Exchange about social media use, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We have a call here from Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning. One of the things that I'm listening along here thinking about is how when the television went digital, that's when I stopped having any relationship with it at all. The only way that I have any relationship with any screens now in my life is when I sit in the computer, and that's only in the library, and I will not have a mobile device or a computer in the home, because a home means where a house becomes a home when you feel safe sleeping someplace in the house. That's what home actually means. That's the connotation of the word. So one of the very damaging things that these devices do, which, by the way, are not socially neutral, machine is socially neutral, is that aids and abets and supports a person in the Descartesian lie, which is cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. And that's just a lie, because I can sit here, even on the phone, talking with you and stop thinking, stop speaking, stop listening, and I'm still here. I am, period, being present. And I don't need thought to be present, and that's one of the great mysteries and beautiful things about life. Anyway, I got a list of over a dozen things here to talk about, but I'm going to stop now.
All right. Thanks for that, Carter. Appreciate it. So the idea, though, that not having devices around, what Carter's talking about that works for himself, wouldn't work for kids these days. And it makes me wonder, we talked to a parenting expert last week who talked about she gives her kids 1 hour of screen time each day. Does that work for tweens and teens in today's world?
Well, you know, the reason I wrote the book was because now so many kids have to do their work in order to online or using a computer. So, yeah, 1 hour of screen time might work for a younger student, but for a student that has 3 hours of homework a night or 2 hours of homework a night and much of it is on using their computer, it won't work. But the other thing that's really interesting about what he mentioned was that television, for example, is now readily available on your phone. So a lot of times when people say, what are the different, you know, how are kids spending time on media? Are they spending time on their phone? Are they spending time watching TV? Well, it's now really complicated because they're all mixed into one. So kids can do everything. They have basically a powerful portable computer, and so can adults. And so there's this integration of how kids are spending time using media online or off using their computer.
I'm constantly surprised by the things that people will share, and we're not even talking about things like sexting yet, but things like SAT scores, and one of my foster kids put his whole paycheck on a picture on Facebook. There's not a lot people want to hold back, evidently, online.
Well, and that's part of why I wrote this book, is because we don't fully understand and recognize that kids are young, they're still developing, but there's a digital trail that is that happens when people share things online, right? I interviewed a bunch of my high school students for the book trailer video that I made, and you can go to socialmediawellnessbook.com and see it. But they were so great because one of them said, they all came up with the solutions in the video. It wasn't me, it was them. And one of them said, just understand that anything you put online can be there forever. And that isn't meant to be a scare tactic. It's meant to be an understanding that, you know, this is just the kind of education we have to give kids so that they stop and think, and we make them able to recognize what does healthy socialization look like, what is effective self-regulation, and what is overall safety. So back to your foster child that shared his paycheck, is there like private information in that photo that you're sharing, like your address or something like that, that you wouldn't want out there publicly? And how do we take precautions, and how do we understand that, and how do we help our kids understand that so that, you know, they're safer online and in real life?
The book, again, is called Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. Anna Homayoun has picked up some of the bits that she's learned in trying to help young people become better students, reducing their distractions. And this is a world full of distractions right now, obviously, in the age of social media. We'll come back and talk more about the ways in which we can emphasize, as parents and grandparents, the three S's: socialization, self-regulation, and safety. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we'll take phone calls and emails from you when we return in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Anna Homayoun, a counselor, consultant, helps students manage distractions and boost their personal productivity in learning environments. She's the founder of Green Ivy Educational Consulting and the author of three books. The latest is Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. You can join the conversation by phone, 800-838-3760, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I keep coming back to the ways in which teens influence each other, which has been the case for a very long time now. But the added power that social media seems to have in making these influences go on, particularly where kids do things like put paychecks and SAT scores online, where people who might have a tendency to feel inferior get that confirmed, a sense of negative validation, the fixed mindset you talk about.
Yeah, so one of the things that I talk about in the book is that a lot of this stuff existed 20 or 30 years ago, right? If somebody rolled their eyes to you in the hallway or like brushed past you without saying hello, you would get that social slight, right? But now everything's been amplified. And because people are behind a screen, it makes them more apt to say or do things they may not say or do in person. And so those are the kind of things that we as parents and educators have to be fully aware of and have conversations around with kids, both if they are on the, you know, potentially saying these things or receiving or having these things said to them. And you bring up a really important point. One of the things I talk about in the book is around overall safety is helping kids have what I call their crisis PR team. So what happens when something doesn't go as planned online? Like somebody says something to you that's really hurtful or offensive, or posts a photo of you or whatever. And often for tweens and teens, they feel like a crisis has happened, right? And they don't know where to turn. And my whole understanding of this is we need to give kids the tools to understand they have people to turn to, places to turn to, should anything happen online that wasn't planned or makes them feel uncomfortable or makes them feel overwhelmed. And the job of parents and educators is helping them identify who those people are before any sort of crisis potentially occurs, right? Because if you're in the middle of something bad happening or something you feel like is bad happening, sometimes you feel like you have no one to turn to. So I talk about this idea of having three supporters and three clarifiers. So supporters are like peers, and clarifiers are like adults, so a counselor, a teacher. It might be parents or aunts or extended relatives. But sometimes as kids get older, they might not want their parents or they might not feel comfortable going to their parents right away, and that's okay. It's just all about us making sure that each kid has a team of people they feel like they can turn to in times of need.
So really setting up something in advance, so when and if something happens, the child is prepared and people are prepared to spring into action.
Absolutely. And that that kids understand that they have people that are behind them, that support them, that they can reach out to should something happen.
I love the way, home, Anna, that you ask people, young people, if they'd like more hours of free time each week.
Oh, yeah. That's how I get people to buy into this whole system. People are all, parents and educators are always so surprised. Now, I've done this work for now 16, 17 years, and they're always like, how do you get like a 12-year-old or 15-year-old boy or girl to be so excited about coming into your office or working with you? And that's what I wrote these books about. It's like showing parents and educators how they can do it too. But the number one secret, which isn't really a secret, is I make it all about the kid. Like every kid would want 7 to 10 more hours of free time to do what they love doing, to have the time to figure out who they are, what they love, spend time doing that, cultivating their own talents. And that's what I do, and that's what this work is all about. And social media wellness is saying, you know what, this social media, there are a lot of benefits to it. There are a lot of challenges to it. We need to understand the language. We need to be aware of it. We can't just say we're never going to use it, because that's not that logically realistic in today's world. But what we can do is understand the language so we set kids up for success, and adults.
Let's take another call. We have Vince in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Anna Homayoun, the author of Social Media Wellness.
Yes, I'm a retired school counselor, and I wanted to say that it was a constant battle the last 20 years before I retired, that administrators and department heads wanted to push computers, computers, computers. Every kid in the school had to have a computer, had to have a computer at home. And I kept saying, no, they need to learn to work together. They should be working on teams and school projects, and the amount of time that they spend on the computer in the classroom, and the parents should monitor the amount of time. Otherwise, they're going to get addicted. And now it sounds like what I was saying for the last 25 years has come true. I walked into the downtown Eugene library a few days ago, and in the lobby area, I saw six people sitting there. Five of the six were on their phones doing whatever, texting, apps, whatever. And only one person was not on a phone. And I was about ready to walk up to her and say how nice it was to see somebody in the library reading a book or doing something else than being on their phone. And she whipped out a telephone from her bag. And I was just, like, ready to throw up my hands and say, it's ridiculous. They can't do anything without being on their phone.
All right. Thanks for that, Vince. Appreciate it. So, Anna, you're up against this perspective all the time, I would think.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is really to help people understand, here's the way, instead of, you know, focus. There's so many books and so many people out there who just want to focus on, this is, you know, relentless, it's, you know, here are all the problems. And I get that. It is so important to recognize what is going on. But at the same point, we have to find solutions. And my work has always been solutions oriented. How do we move through this new culture? Because truly, every generation has had something that the older generation has complained about. We had television, you know, every generation has had something. And so instead of complaining or focusing on the problems that are occurring, we can then also say, okay, so this is the situation of today, and here is how we move through it and help our children, you know, develop into healthy, engaged young adults. Because I'll tell you, not every kid wants to be on the phone all the time, but they don't know how to stay off. And they need help with self-regulation.
Oh, that's a good point. That if everybody else is doing it, of course they're going to be on there too, even if they're not particularly finding interesting things to do there.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I want to ask about some of the strategies you use to try to get people to stop using the devices for the social stuff quite as much. I mean, there must be a concerted effort to separate the schoolwork from the social in time, certainly.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different things that I talk about in the book. One of them is some of the strategies that my students use in terms of they use dual screens, so they'll have a screen that's all their schoolwork and they're signed out of all social media accounts. So when they're doing their schoolwork, they're just doing their schoolwork, and I call that compartmentalization, like compartmentalizing your time, focusing on monotasking so that you actually get the work done more productively, quicker, so that you have more time to socialize or do whatever else you want. The other thing I do is really encourage students to what I call figure out your why. And I use this question, and I say, figure out your why. Figure out why you are picking up your phone when you walk into a room. Is it because you're sad, you're lonely, you're scared that you don't know anyone, all of these pieces? And I've had kids come back to me the week later after we did this figure out your why exercise, and they say, you know what, I've actually reached for my phone less, because I go to reach for it, and then I'm like, okay, why are you reaching for it? You just picked it up 5 minutes ago. Or like they'll identify times where, kind of like sitting in the library and reading a book or standing in the coffee shop line, where they notice everybody's online or on their phones and they choose not to be. They opt out. So it's these little exercises around creating opportunities for digital detox and showing kids why, and then building the intrinsic motivation around figuring out their why, helping them understand and identify what's energizing and draining for them. For example, I used to follow a bunch of fitness bloggers on Instagram, and then I felt like it was draining, because every time I would see them, I'd be like, oh, I didn't do my workout, or oh, I haven't worked out as much as them. So I just stopped following them, and then that was great. You know, you have the opportunity to opt in and opt out. And that's the thing that we really need to help kids understand, because they want to be able to do so. But in the same time, they're part of this developmental process where, you know, they're trying to socialize, they're trying to figure out how they fit in socially in their school, and social media is this entire other socialization that's happening. That doesn't mean they have to opt out completely, by the way. That just means let's create opportunities where they can be offline, and then when they go online, that they enjoy that experience as well for a limited amount of time instead of it being ongoing. It's kind of like, you know, if you ate ice cream 24 hours a day nonstop, it would be kind of sickening. But if you were able to enjoy that ice cream for 15, you know, and really enjoy it and savor it for a limited amount of time and focus on the flavors you like and the time you like, then that's a lot more effective use. And you still get to have ice cream. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does, yeah. Although I would change flavors a few times to get through the 24 hours if I were stuck in there. But
you there know. You go.
John in Ashland wrote a comment here by email. He says, last winter, a documentary was shown for local students that I felt really demonized digital devices with an anti-technology message. You can't hold back technology, but you can balance it in a healthy way. So I love your guest's approach and look forward to checking out her book. John signs this, sent from my digital device. That's John in Ashland. Here's a call from Daniela in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Anna Homayoun.
Hello, hello, and thank you both for addressing this very important subject. And I love how you use empathy and make it fun, and it's a very important subject. Thank you so much. And on the subject of safety, I want to point out that Germany has banned Wi-Fi in all the schools because of 25 years of peer-reviewed scientific data showing harm. And so I recommend people turn off the extras on their phones, like the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth and the location and the mobile data when they're not using them. And then using airplane mode can be very helpful to protect children and others. And there is a wonderful website called EMF, as in Frank, safetynetwork.org for more information. And people do sometimes unplug their routers at night or when they're not using them, turn things off. I think that would be a real plus.
Okay, so they're concerned about EMF safety.
Just one more thing.
Quickly.
Okay, September 16th at 10 a.m. at the Phoenix Grange, Dr. Martin Paul, P-A-L-L, we'll be speaking about how these electromagnetic fields affect us. So everybody's welcome, 10 a.m.
All right, September 16th,
Saturday
10 a.m. at the Phoenix Grange. Thank you, Daniela. Thoughts from you, Anna?
Well, I think every world is different and every school is different. I don't know that it's possible to turn off Wi-Fi within schools, given that students are using it and faculty are using it throughout the day. But I think it's always important to figure out what safety looks like to you socially, emotionally, and physically.
You do have an agreement here, a rather lengthy agreement form here for parents and kids to use. What are some of the major points then? What are some of the things that that kids agree to do in addition to what the parents agree to provide for them?
Well, one of the things that we thought about when we created those sample agreements is, again, they adapt to the needs of each individual family, but it's really focused on how do you present yourself online, what do you say and do online, and then where do you go for extra help if something doesn't go as planned. So, for example, that citizenship is really important, respecting others' privacy, and that understanding that you're leaving a digital footprint. So helping them be aware of that is important. And then when you say thinking of consequences of actions before posting or sending images, because a lot of people don't realize it's taking, sending, and storing images that are inappropriate that can get kids and adults into trouble. And being conscious of how much you spend time online and that you won't use your computer or device after a certain time, you know, that's where parents sort of have to take a role in effective self-regulation. And the last thing around safety is creating, when kids create accounts and give out their, you know, personal information without parental approval, there's all sorts of places where that data can go. So we encourage parents to really understand where kids, you know, creating accounts and what are they get? What information are they putting out there?
All right. Three S's: socialization, self-regulation, and safety, part of social media wellness, helping tweens and teens thrive in an unbalanced digital world. Anna Homayoun, the author, our guest. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.